Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here broadcasting to the foodies across Long Island. With me this morning is, as usual, is co-host and producer, Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom, and how are you?
I'm warmer than I was over the weekend last week. It was the coldest Memorial Day, I think, on record. It was brutal, wasn't it?
It was. So many years. It's in the high 80s, sunshine, bright. Low winds, and this year it was a lot of rain.
A lot of rain and cold and windy. It was just, it destroyed the East End.
It was sort of like a donut, because you had the Friday was nice.
Yeah.
Saturday and Sunday were rain and cold. And Monday sort of, you know, got sunny again.
The late afternoon recovered, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I guess the unofficial start to summer, right? Memorial Day weekend, and it was a few less barbecues than it would have been, I'm sure.
I think so. And I wanted to clarify something with our listeners. Last week, we did an unaired episode of Playing with Fire, and it talked about Mother's Day. So that segment never got to air previously. And with all the craziness of the weekend, we weren't able to record a show last week, so we threw that in. But there was a lot of quietness from our audience. No emails this weekend.
Well, yeah, no questions about Mother's Day. It's already been, right?
Right. So at any rate, the means by which to talk to Tom and I is fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. We love to hear from the listeners, sharing stories, retrospective thoughts, pictures, we promise to reply and have a conversation.
There you go. You know, so I was at work the other day, and guy comes into the kitchen, and he remember Pigpen from Peanuts?
Yeah, Charlie Brown.
Whenever he walked around, it was a cloud of dust over him. This guy was kind of like that. He was kind of dusty, you know what I mean? He had a dusty look to him. And it turns out he's a farmer, right? And he grows all these vegetables over at the planting fields, and which is right next to the club where I'm spending a lot of my time lately. And he says, you know, I got this, that, and the other thing. I'm growing lettuces and he goes on and on. So he gives me a list, and it's like kale and 2 tons of chard and breakfast radishes and purple radishes. And
hold on. Mm-hmm. What is a breakfast radish?
It's something you eat before 11. You know, what else could it be? No, it's a shape. It's like a long, almost like, it looks like, almost like the size of a jalapeno pepper would be. You know, it's long and oval in its shape, and it's red on the outside, just like the regular radishes that you see in the supermarket. But I like it better. It's got a nicer look to it to me. Anyway, and they're good cooked, by the way. Radishes are another underused vegetable. You can actually steam them. And it'll get soft, and you serve them with like a little melted butter. It's a kind of a French thing, you know, the
you know,
radish.
You're talking about vegetables, and it's the season, and now I'm planting my vegetable garden.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me when you think about how much area something like radish, scallions, carrots take up in a field as compared to things that grow up
yeah,
in like bushes and
yeah,
vines
for sure,
and stuff.
And, you know, where you live in Nassau, you know, you don't have the deer problem that we have out east. Try and plant the garden out east. It's you spend half your time, you know, fending off the fauna, you know, as they say. You know, keeping rabbits and deer out of your garden is a monumental effort. But anyway, my point with this is he came by and he He brought me all these sample vegetables like kale, and he had a lot of rough greens. Then he had lettuces, no tomatoes yet, obviously, but potatoes, things like that. He had beets. They were all just gorgeous, you know. So I've been buying, you know, some vegetables for him. And my point in telling you this is if you have a chance and you have a little area and time, plant a garden. Because the lettuces that, you know, we got from right next door were so good. I mean, they taste so much different than the lettuces that you buy in the store that have been processed. And
in the most simplistic comparison, we've talked about this before, about tomatoes and, you know, the store-bought as compared to farm-bought. But when I go to my local deli and I get a sandwich with a sliced tomato, sometimes it's cardboard.
Yeah.
Well, it's just, you know, a thin slice that's just there for appearance, not for taste.
No, it's there for the $2, you know what I mean?
Well, yes, but then, you know, I've gotten really crazy. I use a mandolin. Mm-hmm. And get a nice tomato and let it ripen.
Yeah.
And then get a nice slice.
Watch your fingertips on those.
Yes, yes. Believe me, I know that. But, oh, my goodness, the taste of a fresh, succulent tomato on a sandwich is, like, incredible.
I know. It's crazy. And you know, my friend Erica Marcus, who writes for Newsday, she's always trying to make the perfect tomato sandwich, you know. And she does a great job of explaining all of that. Like, you know, why bother with, you know, cottony, tasteless tomatoes when you can wait, you know, for July, and that's when tomato season starts. You know, I can get some good heirloom tomatoes right now from points down south, but there's really nothing like the local stuff. It was a place when I was in Montauk called Ocean View Farms, and their tomatoes and their onions were incredible. I mean, you know, I got so spoiled out there. You could actually peel an onion of theirs with a little bit of salt and eat it raw. And I'm not going to say it was like eating an apple. I mean, you had the onion flavor for sure, but it wasn't like if you bit into a store-bought onion, you'd be horrified, you know? I don't really understand what people see in raw onion.
What's the difference between white onion, yellow onion, purple onion, red onion? And don't tell me it's color.
I was going to say, primarily the color. I don't know. It's genus and species stuff, I guess, you know? I think that the red onions tend to be a little more mellow in flavor.
Interesting, because when I go to Bagel Boss and get my Sunday lox on a bagel, Nova, the youngins, you know, they'll say what color onion you want. You know, the more veteran, they know what to do.
But
when my mom sends me to get, you know, white onions or this or that, I don't understand what the difference is.
You know, there's all kinds of wives' tales out there about food and stuff. And some things, some particular things are true. Most of it I find to be all that, you know, it's not a big deal. I mean, if you use a red onion in a stew or a white onion in a stew, I promise you, you wouldn't be able to tell which one is which without, you know, your eyes open. So, you know, most of that stuff doesn't matter so much. But I think if you're going to eat it raw, you know, that's a whole other story. You know, people put raw onion on hamburger. I just think raw onion is too harsh. So I grill most of my onions.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, the famous steakhouse salad is sliced tomato with...
Yeah, bad tomatoes and raw onion.
And many times, yes, it's not a well-ripened tomato, and it's always with the onion, which sometimes, just like you're saying, is too much.
It's harsh, yeah. You know, some people soak their onions, you know, in water before they serve a raw onion. But to me, if you're going to have, like, let's say the classic place to put a raw onion is on a hamburger, right? You know, people always serve that raw onion slice in a tomato and a pickle. You know, it's kind of the standard garnish issue, you know. If you take that slice of onion and just either sort that, like we have griddles, you know, planches and stuff and grills, so it's easier for us. And just grill it on both sides. You'll bring out some sugars and you'll completely change the flavor.
Well, that's the way the Mediterranean cuisine is, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Because many times they'll serve the chicken or the steak or whatever, and it's with a roasted tomato and a roasted onion, but the onion is like so mellow.
Well, yeah. I mean, they have a 2,000-year head start on us, so they figured it out. You know, we're just learning that, you know, to bite into a raw onion on a burger is just, It's not doing the burger any good. It's certainly not doing your breath any good. It's not doing anything any good. So why are you doing it? You know, I mean, like I said, I'd rather see grilled onions on a hamburger that has some sweetness and some flavor to it. You're bringing out the...
Yeah, no, it's amazing because, like, again, going to that Mediterranean dish, they'll quarter the onion roasted, and you just eat it like a vegetable.
Yeah, I know a guy in England who, he's a chef in England, and he makes this whole dish out of a roasted onion. It's like an appetizer. It's a complete whole roasted onion. He does this, that, and the other thing with it, you know, whatever. But that's essentially what it is. And it's cool. You know, you can eat it. It's, you know.
Well, there's a restaurant in Farmingdale. It's owned by, I think, the Nutty Irishman. It's on Main Street. They actually serve onion soup in a roasted onion.
Really?
And it's very nice because, again, it's got that mellowness. It's not just very strong. But, you know, you're talking about tomatoes and onion and salad. I have this yearning this weekend for a nice tomato and cucumber salad, maybe with some feta, a little bit of olive oil. What herbs do you put on that? What spices?
I think the only one that you can put a little bit of fresh oregano in there. I wouldn't use the dried. But dill seems to me to be the one that I would go with, you know, in there. Because dill has that kind of, you know, Mediterranean, like from, I would say, you know, well, from Israel, Syria, you know, all that area in there where you have all those flavors, you know, hummuses and things like that. Dill seems to be a prevalent herb, you know, and I think that's a natural for that. Other than that, I wouldn't mess with it too much. I mean, you know, you have cucumber, you have... They sometimes put onion in there, too, like a red onion, tomato, and feta. That's like a country Greek salad, you know, without the lettuces. You know, I kind of prefer those, actually.
If I replace the tomato with watermelon, still do the cucumber?
Yeah, why not? You know, sure. Yeah, they're complementary flavors, you know. I think that's another unused fruit. I mean, watermelon, for most people, is one of those things that you cut in wedges and give to the kids to shut them up, you know. And you know, maybe you'll have it at a barbecue for dessert. But it works really well in salads, you know. I use them in salads all the time. And it works particularly well in margaritas, too, you know. Watermelon Cosmos, you know, you can take that watermelon and juice it out. And from what I've read, watermelon's almost like the perfect food. It has everything you need to survive. You can survive on watermelon for your whole life, from what I heard and read. And it has the nutrients. It's got some sugars. It's got carbohydrates, you know, whatever. I guess you would need some proteins at some point. But, you know, the bottom line is it's really a great underused, you know, fruit, you know, for the most part. Most melons are. But watermelon in particular, that's my favorite, you know, the color, the texture, the, you know. And when you have it, you know, when you have it in the middle of the summer when it's perfect and it's got that crispness to it, you know, and that underlying sweetness, that's the thing that, you know, it's the missing note that we're all trying to find in watermelon. But I use it a lot with corn. You know, corn and watermelon salad with feta is really cool. Like, you got to roast the corn. You know, I take some red and yellow peppers and some red onions, saute that down, mix it all together, you know, obviously off the cob. And, you know, I add feta cheese and diced watermelon, or sometimes I'll cut triangles to make it look nicer or whatever. But it's a great combination, and it screams summer to me, you know. A little fresh basil in there, and you pretty much have most of the summer flavors all together in one dish, you know.
So my mind's on the grill. I guess I feel cheated from last week because I really didn't get to use my grill. But I'm thinking eggplant, zucchini. I'm thinking portobello mushroom.
Sure.
What's the best way to handle that on the grill?
Well, it's funny you should ask. And we didn't plan this before the show, by the way. But I just did a grilling class for guys at the club. And I was kind of thinking nobody's going to really care about this, you know. It's the wives making them go or whatever, you know. And it turned out we didn't have a huge turnout. There was, I don't know, 15, 20 guys, whatever it was. And so when I started thinking about it, I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to teach them how to grill. And basically, you're going to take a piece of meat, you're going to put it on the grill, you're going to wait till you get it marked, you're going to turn it over, you're going to wait till it cooks, and then you're going to take it off. So there's not much to teach there. So I'm thinking, all right, what can I show them that's going to, you know, make their grill chops have a little pizzazz to it, and it's all about marinades. So when we're talking about grilling, whether it's the vegetables you mentioned or any kind of meats, it's really all in the marinade. And that's the key. You know what I mean? The difference between, you know, my steak coming off the grill and let's say Stew's steak coming off the grill, is going to be that my marinade is probably going to be a little funkier than Stew's. And I know how to, you know, I know what kind of timing I need for that, this, that, and the other thing. So it's the professional amateur thing. But the bottom line is, like, in any other game like golf, you know, if you take a game like golf, right, putting is the one thing that you can almost be as good at as the pros. You'll never hit the ball as far. You'll never hit it as close. But, you know, everybody can putt, you know. And it's the same thing with grilling. I mean, some people are better at getting temperatures right. Some people are better at you know, marking it and making it look nice. But we can all make marinades. And marinades are the key to the flavor of grilling. And I have different marinades that I use for different species of animal, different marinade for vegetables, you know, stuff that...
Separately, we have to talk about this marinade phenomenon with sous vide, but a discussion for another time. I don't right. want to detour us.
No,
from
no,
what
no. You're
going right
to yell that. Somebody's going to yell at you on the internet. But I think that, you know, if you find a good marinade for, let's take steak, right? Steak, for example. For me, I tend to use sugar in my steak marinades. And it's got that Asian-y kind of flair. Like the one marinade I use for steak all the time has an equal combination of Worcestershire, soy sauce, sugar, and lemon juice.
A lot of people throwing ginger in things.
Yeah, ginger works in there too. And then I hit it with a lot of sriracha and some herbs, you know, usually basil and parsley.
Fresh.
Yeah, of course. So, but the key is when you have a salt mixture in there, like soy sauce, it tends to draw the moisture out of the steak. So you have to be careful. If you marinate it too long, you'll never be able to cook it rare. It's always going to have that gray look on the inside because you've robbed the steak of its moisture. So when you marinate a steak like that, you want it anywhere between like 3 hours and 8 hours at the most overnight. But then you got to take it out of the marinade because it'll continue to... And it probably doesn't matter so much with home cooks because they're not marinating for a week or anything like sometimes we do in restaurants, you know. But, you know, that type of marinade, and I can give it to you off the top of my head, and I'll wait a couple of minutes if somebody wants to grab a pen or whatever. But this works well with all kinds of meats, with steak, with pork, lamb. Lamb not so much. Lamb, I'd probably just go more garlicky, but it works with... all the cuts of beef, and if you're going to use it in a home setting, I would do maybe a quarter a cup of soy sauce, a quarter a cup of lemon juice, a quarter a cup of Worcestershire, and a quarter a cup of brown sugar, and then just mix those together and add maybe I don't know, maybe 8 basil leaves, chiffonade it up, you know, chopped fine, and maybe a little fistful of parsley chopped fine, you know. And then I would add about, and it's going to sound like a lot, but it's not, about 5 tablespoons of sriracha. And sriracha is like a chili paste from Thailand that's got a really unique flavor. And it's all over the place. You can find it everywhere. And you pretty much have it. And just use that and then, you know, submerge your, you know, steak in that. And then leave it for, like I said, minimum 3 or 4 hours, maximum overnight. But 8 hours is fine. So if you start it in the morning, if you do it before you leave for work in the morning, it'll be perfect by the time you get home at 6 o'clock. Take it out, just pat it off. And you can also use a little of that marinade as a jus later on because it's not thick, you know. And you can, you know, warm that up and just pour it over your steak. And what you want to do is you don't want to use too much of that on the grill itself because there's a lot of sugar in it, you know, and it's going to burn. But you put your steak on, and the key to grilling is leaving the steak or whatever piece of meat or vegetable you have on for a long enough period of time for the grills to sear the steak and leave those marks there. Because if you take it off too soon, there's not enough of a seal, you know, and you'll pick it up and you'll have pieces stuck to the grill and stuff like that. People get a little nosy when it comes to grilling, you know, they're constantly looking, is it ready, is it ready, is it ready, is it ready, you know. It'll be fine. Leave it on 3 or 4 minutes, 5 minutes, whatever. You're good.
So you mentioned soy sauce before. Mm-hmm. I keep hearing about something, liquid aminos. Are you familiar with that?
No.
It's a soybean alternative to traditional soy sauce. I just didn't know if you knew what it was all about.
Oh, is that the gluten-free?
It's no table salt or preservatives, and it's a non-GMO liquid protein concentrate.
That's way too healthy for me.
derived from soybeans.
I'm a child of the 60s. I like chemicals. What can I tell you? You know?
So two other questions could come to mind with all this discussion. What is the spice that's very familiar in Mediterranean cooking?
Cumin?
I'm not sure. I know, like, if I go to the deli and I'll get a chickpea salad,
right,
and it's got these like little dark specks.
It's cumin.
It's cumin?
Yeah. Cumin's got this smoky flavor. It's got a kind of a darker. You know, I tend to look at spices darker and lighter. You know, the darker spices, one of the darker spices.
And if you go to the...
I use it a lot in chili, in chilies and stuff like that in Mexican cooking.
Yeah, also, like, if you go to the salad bar and the...
God forbid.
Well, you know, you get your feta cheese and oil or whatever they have. But it's got these specks, and I guess it's the cumin.
Yeah, it's probably cumin.
The other thing, when I was this was at Stu Leonard's, I saw they had... cheese stuffed hamburgers raw that you cook, and I was trying to figure it out. You know, to melt the cheese, it takes no time at all. To cook the burger, it's a little more involved. So how is it when you have a stuffed burger like that with goat cheese or whatever white cheese that they had?
It's a novelty act. You know, it's like the mustached lady at the carnival. You
but
know?
Does it just bleed through the burger?
No, it stays pretty much in there. Daniel Boulud years ago did that with foie gras. He stuffed the burger with foie gras and, you know, charged $50 for it or whatever it was. It's just really a novelty act, that's all. You know, I mean, the burger, the cheese on the top, cheese in the middle, what's the difference? The problem is, you know, like, what do you do if it's well done, you know? So it has to be, you know, you got to time it, you know. You got to make sure that the cheese isn't hard. You know, if it's really rare, the cheese isn't melted. If it's too well done, the cheese is.
I see these other things, burgers, filet mignon burger, Wagyu burger.
Yeah.
I can't think of a...
short rib.
No, the other Asian, Kobe.
Kobe
burger.
Well, that's just an indulgence. I mean, you know, it's just taking expensive meat, you know, lesser cuts of expensive cows and turning them into, you know, what's edible. You know, if you want to pay $25, $30 for a burger, go ahead, you know. Is it going to taste that much different? You know, the thing about Kobe is the fat content. You know, the fat content is huge. So, I mean, if I have, you know, like a strip... To me, it's about maybe a foot long, maybe, you know, 14 inches, 15 inches long, you know. And a regular American prime strip will probably be, that'll cost me like $120. A Kobe strip the same size is about $800. So it's about eight times what it would cost. And if you look at a Kobe strip, it's almost all white. You know, it's the fat content so high. So you can't really make a burger out of like an A5 Kobe, you know, loin. It'll just melt away to nothing. So what they're doing is they're taking, you know, what's called Kobe, I guess, in Australia and America, which doesn't have the same fat content as the ones from Japan, and they're making burgers out of it. And all it means is it probably has a higher fat content. So the average fat content in American burgers is about 20%, 15 to 20%, 15 being lean, 20% is what we normally use commercially. So maybe that has a 25 or 30% fat content, which means it will probably have a little bit more flavor, but a shrinkage is probably much more because the fat melts away. So I don't know. I've served Kobe burgers and you know, yeah, they go, you know, it's just one of those things. It's kind of a, you know, prime instead of choice. I mean, you know, it's the same kind of thing. You know, you're just upping the ante a little bit, and, you know, it's a little more expensive, a little nicer piece of meat.
And then as far as steak, a New York strip or a ribeye, and then what's this thing with a filet on the bone?
Well, you know, that's where they come from. So they just, instead of separating the filet mignon from the bone, they leave it on the bone. What's the point of that? I mean, the point of a filet mignon is tender. And no bone, and not messing with anything. So the filet on the bone, again, it's a novelty act, and it winds up costing you more because the weight is higher, right? So if you have an 8-ounce filet mignon with a bone on it, now it's a 12-ounce filet mignon.
I'm sitting here giggling because I went to Stu Leonard's. I just had a yearning for short rib.
Right.
So the guy, they had already cleared the counter, so he got it out, and I said, I'll take half of that. and the bone fell out. And he goes, do you want me to include that? I said, he had done me a favor because the bone weighs.
Sure.
So I got it a little cheaper.
There you
go.
Made
me feel good. Tasted that much better.
I love that. I can taste a bargain from miles away.
But now, again, the New York strip or the ribeye, what's the difference in cut?
Well, the difference is where they come from on the cow, but the difference in cooking or flavor is the strip is denser and meatier. The ribeye tends to, the meat's a little looser, and it also has more fat. So in my humble opinion, or not so humble opinion, the ribeye has more flavor. But the New York strip is kind of easier to eat and it's easier to sell because it doesn't have that fat content. So, you know, it's what you like. Like my friend Dave's a big steak guy and he would rather have a New York strip than a ribeye. You know, I personally would rather have a ribeye than a New York strip. I think there's more flavor, but, you know, whatever.
So you're in a restaurant and your steak has gristle or it has a vein all of a sudden. Should you be like, mad?
Well, yeah, at $60 a steak, you should be mad, sure, you know. I mean, when I trim steaks, I trim them down to where everything is edible on the steak. Most restaurants don't do that. Most restaurants leave that one fat strip along the one side, you know, it's the top of the strip, you know, you have to cut that off, you know, and you always have a little bit of stuff on your plate when it's all done, right? You have that tail piece and you have that one side where there's all that fat there. My point is, why are you doing that? I don't get it. You know, you can't eat it anyway, so why give them something you can't eat?
I think, you know, in the butcher count display case, it looks more interesting.
I don't know. I mean, when I cut the steaks, they look like they're all meat, you know what I mean? And there's no grizzle on them or anything like that. You know, and it's a little more expensive to do that, you know, so charge. It's not like these people are shy. I mean, I was looking at a steakhouse the other day. I mean, getting $64 for a New York strip. You know, so, you know, at $64, you have a little room to work with there, you know? And to send, like, would you send something out other than a bone? Would you send a piece of fish out with something inedible on it? I mean, I don't get it. You know what I mean? It's like dopey to me, you know?
When you're cooking a steak, to me, it's either under-seasoned, it can be over-seasoned, and then it's perfect. How do you moderate that?
It's a trial and error, and it's, you know, it's different strokes for different folks. I mean, some people have more salt tolerance than others. And, you know, I think steaks need a lot of salt. You know, when you think you've salted a steak before you cook it, you probably haven't salted it enough. It's the same thing with pasta water. Most people don't realize that when you cook pasta, that water should taste like seawater. That's how salty it should be. You know, some people put a teaspoon of salt in 6 gallons of water and expect it to do something. It won't. You know, but if you want your pasta to taste like something, you got to salt the water and you got to salt it heavily. And it's the same thing with steaks. Steaks are, you know, they're kind of lacking in flavor a lot of times because, you know, the fat contents generally aren't huge unless you have a Kobe or something like that. So I tend to salt them. I'll tell you another secret. You know what I used to do with cool fish? And I used to get a lot of compliments on a steak. And I would never tell anybody what I did because they'd be horrified. I used to make a paste out of rosemary and anchovy, right? Take salted canned anchovies, make a paste out of it. I would rub it on the steak, right? And you wouldn't get the fish flavor because it'd get burned off on the grill. But you'd get that salt lick from the anchovies and a little bit of flavor from the rosemary. And everybody used to tell me, oh, your steaks, they're so different. They taste so different. Da, da, da. We love them. Yeah, whatever, you know. And it was all the anchovy. And what do you do? And if I told people I put anchovies on it, they'd be horrified. You know?
That's like when men anchovies, like most people's, like.
Yeah, of course, you know. They recoil in horror, right? So. You don't tell them. I mean, what people don't know doesn't hurt them, you know, kind of thing. Especially, you know, unless there's an allergy involved. I mean, you know, you're not doing anything bad. You're just putting flavor in there, you know.
As always, I'm all over the place. I had an opportunity to dine at Vittorio's in Amityville last night.
Yeah,
Have you ever been there?
Sure, yeah.
What's your go-to entree or food there?
I'm usually a fish guy, you know, so, I'll see whatever fish special is there. And, you know, a lot of times I'll just tell the chef, make me something. I don't care what it is, you know, because I'll eat anything.
So I'm intrigued by bucatelli, which I guess is a fat spaghetti with hollow.
Bucatini. Yeah.
Hard to find, actually.
But hard to eat, too, by the way.
Is it?
You can't really twist it on a fork because it's too thick. It just keeps, like, flapping around,
I
you know?
I did have that problem last night.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I think that's like the featured pasta on their menu. Is it more known as that restaurant as a chop house, or is it?
I always thought of it as an Italian restaurant. You know, he may be going that way. I haven't eaten there in a while. But I always liked it. You know, I would sit at the bar, the little bar in front. You know?
I was with a friend, and I wanted to be adventurous. I was going to pick up the tab, and I did, but I didn't want her to be intimidated by the prices, because it was a moderately priced restaurant. Great selection. So I was sort of confused about what to get, and there was something on the menu that caught my eye, but afterwards, I said, you know, maybe I should have been a little more adventurous. But they had a veal parmesan, not as a traditional veal cutlet. It was a veal chop, a really pounded veal chop, fried, and then with, you know, sauce and cheese.
Sure.
It was an interesting take on it. I guess I had envisioned something a little more unique rather than just a fried chop. And then we had some sort of pasta that it was the bucatini, but it was it had some interesting accoutrements.
Accoutrements. Listen to you. Yeah, go ahead.
It was it might even had bacon in it, which is unusual. But
guanciale.
Let's see, it's Italian gel bacon. Yeah, pasta. it was. What do we got here? I don't see it.
Well, you know, the veal chop thing, you know, veal parmesan used to be just cutlet, you know, pounded, and, you know, take a piece that's about 2 ounces, looks like a golf ball, and pound it to the size of a doormat and then bread it, you know, and then fry it, and you have dinner for six. But Carbone in the city was the first one. I feel it was the first one to do that veal parmesan on the bone. You know, they take a real veal chop and make a parmesan out of it, which was kind of a cool idea. I think it's gone to you know, excess at some point, but I thought it was a pretty cool idea. You know, they've been doing that with veal chops for years, and using it for Milanese, you know, when they do that veal chop with the salad on it. It was just kind of fun if you're, you know, looking for something a little lighter. But yeah, they were the first ones to do it. And now you see, I see that kind of fairly frequently in restaurants. I was just in Trattoria out in Smithtown a couple of weeks ago, and a couple next to me had the same thing. The guy had a veal chop, was pounding them, thinking, man, he's going to be a hero if he gets through that, you know?
Well, there was no question. It was, you know, actually, I have to rethink it. It was exceptionally tender.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes veal can be a little tough. This was I mean, I cut it with my fork.
Right.
It was that tender. I was really intrigued, again, by the menu. There was fish, as you had said, anything from branzini to, I guess, sea bass or whatever. They had duck. They had interesting pastas. I think they had a pasta New Orleans, which, again, you don't really think about Italian cuisine, but I guess it was basically the pasta, but just taken in a different direction.
Yeah,
It just seemed like an incredible menu, very tasty, a little loud.
Well, you get a lot of people in there, and then it gets a little buzzy, you know. I mean, he's done a great job for a long time over there, from what I understand. Like I said, I've only eaten there a few times, like maybe two or three. Maybe two or three times. And it's always been good. I've always had a good meal.
It just had a really cool look about it. It's on the corner of Broadway and Amityville.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you walk in, and there's like a bar area, but then you walk through a heavy velvet red curtain into the into the dining room, and it just had a nice look. It had a really cool upscale vibe. I can't.
Yeah, my only bone of contention with them is I was looking through the menu, and I'm kind of a stickler on menu terminology and things like that. And not that I'm, you know, it's the only view on it. There's, you know, plenty of views, but it's mine, damn it. And that's what it is, you know. So I can usually tell what's going on in the kitchen by reading the menu. When you get very steeped in this stuff from a professional standpoint, you kind of know things that the public doesn't know by, you know, nuanced writings or, you know, ingredients or whatever. So I can tell what's going on in there for the most part. And I'm reading through the sides, and one of the sides says corn love. Did you notice that?
No.
Yeah, you can order corn love. And I'm like, what, pray tell, is corn love? Well, it's you know, it's basically sautéed corn, you know? I was extraneous.
And what did they call it?
Corn love.
Wow.
Yeah. If you look up the menu and you look up the sides, you'll see it right there in yellow and white. Corn Love.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, let's take a break and we'll sell some airtime here and do some commercials.
We're
going to
share some info about Courtney's venture.
Yeah, there you go.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming personalized size desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
So last week, Memorial Day weekend, I did a shore dinner, and it was five courses, you know, steamers. We had shrimp cocktail, and there was an heirloom tomato salad, and we had the choice of a 2-pound lobster and or a steak. And in dessert, we did a margarita cheesecake, which was kind of fun, with a pretzel crust, you know, kind of like a salty thing, you know. Anyway, I hadn't cooked steamers in a long time because it's not like a big call for them, you know. Where I am, there is to some degree out in Allure, but I don't do much of the cooking out there, more supervising. And so I got a chance to cook them, and I forgot how good they are, you know. Steamers this time of year, the soft clam, you know, with the oblong white shell with the thingy hanging off, the whatever you want to call it, the neck.
So you bring that up, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I actually was on the Freeport Nautical Mile last week.
Really?
And I had not fried oysters, but I guess it was grilled oysters, it looked different to me than, you know, oysters on a half shell.
Mm.
It resembled to me almost like a steamer.
Really?
I don't know how they prepared it, that it had this look. It was plump. It was just, you know, like, at least last time I had oysters at an affair, you know, it was like thin.
And they were billed as grilled?
I think it was a grilled oyster.
I'll have to look into that.
But maybe it was steamed oyster.
Yeah. I mean, there's a thousand ways to prepare them. I mean, they're great, you know, really versatile. But the steamer thing, you know, I think a lot of people are turned off because of kind of the way they're eaten, you know. Yeah, pull them out of the shell by the, I call it the Chauncey, the neck there, you know, and then you got there's like a membrane on that neck, and it, you can eat it, it's edible, but you know, I tend to pull it off. So, you know, dip it in water, you know, because sometimes it's sandy, but you can purge them too. You know, you can purge them. If you put them in a little bit of water with cornmeal for a couple hours, they'll purge themselves and get rid of most of that sand, you know, but they're traditionally served with a bowl of broth, you know, that they're steamed in, and some butter, you know, the drawn butter to dip.
Yeah, usually there's like hot water, and then there's the melted butter.
Yeah,
and melted butter.
Yeah, I don't use water. I use I make a clam broth, and I steam them in the clam broth, and then I use that liquid that I steamed them in.
So that's a good question. do people drink that broth afterwards?
Generally not, no.
Because it's sandy.
Yeah, you're trying to take the sand out of it, you know. That's really the only purpose for it, you know. But yeah, I forgot how good they are. They're really sweet and great this time of year, you know. And it's all you need, a little bit of drawn butter. And it's one of those things that, you know, it's like lobster in the shell to me is something that should be eaten outside, you know, on a picnic table or on a deck.
Well,
it's
funny you say that. I went to a golf outing, the dinner afterwards, and they had everything inside, but they had the raw bar outside. And it was done pretty well, but it wasn't done perfectly. It didn't have the, I guess, the vinegar dressing. What do you
mignonette.
Call it? The minuet, which is, I like to.
Mignonette.
Minuet.
Yeah, minuet is a dance. Mignonette. And
minuet. We'll let you say it.
Don't do the woo-woo-woo-woo. Get the woo-woo out of there, you know what I mean?
But they had the cocktail sauce, which was a little overpowering.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, I get the cocktail sauce thing. I'm more of a purist. I don't use much of it. You know, I'll use it with clams, I'd rather have horseradish.
So the radio station, our sister station, KJOY, actually gave away a wedding to a lucky couple last week.
Really?
And it was...
Who's catering it?
It was catered by the Sandcastle in Franklin Square.
Oh, yeah.
And my goodness, what a great job they did. And again, I sometimes judge the quality of an establishment by the raw bar they put out.
Sure.
And they had a really nice raw bar. They had really nice shrimp. It wasn't that soggy, wimpy shrimp. But I actually found something that really appealed to me. They had, it was interesting, they had sushi.
Right.
They had the raw bar, and part of the raw bar was a seafood salad.
Mm-hmm.
What I found is they had whole shrimp in there,
mm-hmm.
but I thought the tanginess, I guess it was like some sort of vinaigrette or something.
Yeah, citrus in there.
Citrus vinaigrette. But that with a dash of cocktail sauce was incredible.
You put ketchup on your seafood salad.
No, just the shrimp. I was the guy picking the shrimp.
Oh, I got it
but
now.
Instead of having the
you
shrimp
cocktail.
You created
your own shrimp cocktail.
It just had that.
Yeah.
I guess it just like you said, it was just this
little
very
extra
tasty
push.
Oomph.
Well, it's, you know, it, look, cooking is all about trying to get flavor into something. And you can make shrimp cocktail, right? You can take the shrimp, boil them in water. You know what I mean? Take them out, cool them, serve them with cocktail sauce. And people go, okay, it's shrimp cocktail. Or you can do what I do and use, you know, lemon and Old Bay seasoning and some pepper and onions and celery and make the water taste like something and cook the shrimp in that because they absorb that flavor. So now when you bite into it, you have all these other flavors going on with the shrimp. And it's not like it overpowers it. You know, you got to be careful, but it gives it a little more, you know, push to it.
Well, I'm laughing now because so many times when people get a shrimp cocktail, it's with cocktail sauce.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they power it up with additional horseradish.
Right.
And I guess it's like an epiphany that...
Either one.
Yeah, something like
one
that.
One or the other.
You know, all of a sudden, what are you doing? Are you actually just trying to bury the blandness of the shrimp?
Yeah, you're trying to help it out. Shrimp are kind of tasteless. That's why we put so much effort into the water, you know? We're trying to get some flavor out of that shrimp or add some flavor to the shrimp, whatever, without masking it with ketchup, you know?
I find that, like, raw shrimp has to be, like, I'll say crisp, but it's I don't really mean crisp, but firm.
Yeah, no, it's got to have
again,
a bite to
the,
it.
The wimpy sure. ones, it's just like, why?
Yeah, well, look, here's the dirty secret. You know, they sell them already cooked in bags. I mean, you know, frozen. So, you know, the thing's been cooked. It's been frozen.
But you either get cleaned or... You either get it in the shell or out of the shell, right?
Yeah, you can get it both ways, but you can also get it cooked and ready to go where they open a bag and put it out on a roll bar, you know? That's where you're going to get your soggy, lousy, you know? But that's the state of catering, you know? I mean, that's what people do, you know?
And when I went to the frozen department where they have all the shrimp at the store, they had shrimp, salad shrimp, not shrimp salad. Salad shrimp.
Oh, who knew?
Those were like little baby shrimps.
Yeah, well, it's I guess, you know, it's a nicer name than, you know, 81, 85s, you know, which is what they are probably, you know, 81, 82
I did see that all the shrimp are categorized by weight, like
yeah.
you said.
Well, count per pound.
Out of a pound, yeah.
It's count per pound.
I like the colossal ones. I guess it's like 12 out of a pound. Or
yeah,
like
yeah. You can
something.
Get U8s, you know. I can get U2s, you know, not the band, the shrimp. 8 ounces a piece, you know. So I wonder if that's where they got the name from. Colossal shrimp. You too. I like it. But, you know, shrimp are probably the only menu item. I mean, you know, years ago when I first started this business, shrimp were like the expensive thing, you know. Now they're cheaper than everything else. It's pretty funny how it's all turned around.
So here's a great reason for people to write into us at fire@whli.com. fire@whli. What was the food that your parents let you order or ordered for you that was like coming of age? You know, like, you know, up until one point, you know, your parents ordered your plain pasta and you put some butter in it just to shut you up when you're at the restaurant, or they got your chicken fingers or, you know, a burger or whatever it was.
Mm.
Like, what was your coming of age? I mean, did your parents say, you're ready for lobster or you can get shrimp? Well, you know, share with us your growing up and how your menu diversified from the simple things in life.
Yeah, I'd be curious to hear, because, you know, being in the restaurant business, my whole thing changed by the time I was 15, because then I was eating dinner at the restaurants with, you know, the people I was working with. So I was exposed to a lot more than the average cat. And, you know, growing up with my grandmother's a great cook, so obviously I had some home stuff early on. But I think that people's menu in their head doesn't really change much until they become an adult. You know, you kind of grow up with the foods. I know my brother, you know, he's got the same menu that my mother had. You know, he lives by himself and he cooks the same things that my mother cooked, you know. It's all he ever knew, you know. So I'd be interested to hear how, you know, different people from different demographic, you know, groups or whatever had their whole thing. See, we never went out to restaurants because we didn't have any money, right? So the only place we ever went was a pizza place. So I was allowed to have a pizza, you know, and maybe a Coke or whatever, you know. Yeah, nobody ever said to me, you're ready for steak, you know, at a restaurant. they cooked. But anyway, I tell you a funny story, though, about that. I worked in a steakhouse. It was my first job as a kid, right? So 2 weeks ago, I was bumping through Facebook looking for something. I came across, they have these groups like, you know, you're from whatever town,
right?
So I'm a Carl Place guy, right? You know, you're from Carl Place, .. So I always kind of look around, see what's going on. So somebody was cleaning out their mother's garage or whatever after she had passed away or whatever, and they found all these things, and they posted, you know, these, like, things from the high school newspaper and all. And they had one from a newspaper in town that had an advertisement from the restaurant I was working in at the time.
And what restaurant might that have been?
It was called the Sirloin Steak Pub. S-I-R, new word, capital L-O-I-N, Sirloin. And it had a picture of a beef eater, you know, one of those guys in England that guards the castle, you know. And so that was the play on words. And it was the classic, you know, salad bar, all the beer you can drink, all the bread you could
stand. Was that on Post Avenue? Or?
No, it was on Old Country Road.
Oh.
Just west of Ellison Avenue, right across from where the Source Mall is now.
Okay.
And anyway, so I'm looking at the prices, right? And I remember my boss coming into the kitchen and talking to the chef and saying, listen, I think I'm going to have to raise the price of twin lobster tails from $4.95 to $5.95, and I don't know if anybody's going to pay it. You know what I mean? It's just ludicrous.
This is the time when people were buying homes for $14,000.
Yeah, it shows you how old I am, right? So anyway, I'm looking at the advertisement. The advertisement says, you know, come try a fabulous sirloin, whatever it was. You know, small 9 ounce, large 12 ounce. You know, the 9 ounce was $3.95. The lodge was $4.95 with all the beer and all the salad you can eat and bread.
Wow.
I think it even came with a dessert or something.
Wow.
I'm saying to myself, I'm trying to hold this under $64 an order. You know, it's like hilarious. And at the time, you know, my family couldn't afford to go out, you know, with $3 steaks. It was like, that was critical, you know.
So you're talking about times of yesteryear. So explain to me when deli sandwiches became artificial meats. So I was at the air show over the weekend. We had the
only
Jones
one
Beach
day,
air
right?
show. Well, they had the practice sessions on Friday, then Saturday and Sunday. The regular days were rained out.
Right.
But through a really diligent effort by New York State Parks, they were able to move it till Monday. And it was really, really nice. But the radio stations involved, and I was there, and they provided food, and it was catered by Zorn's. And it just reminded me that what deli really should be, deli sandwiches. Like, when they serve a turkey sandwich at Zorn's, it's real turkey breast.
Mm.
If I go to Pastrami King in Merrick and order a turkey sandwich, it's sliced turkey breast.
Yeah.
As compared to boar's head or whatever these other things are. And when you get your turkey sandwich, that turkey tastes to me like ham almost. But is it actually, you would know, is it something that's like pulverized and like put back together? Because all the turkey breasts in the case when you go to, boar's head is all the same shape. It looks like it's molded. Yeah, it's just not fresh turkey.
No, it's not. They have both. I mean, you have stuff that's, packed together and stuff that's, that's a whole
gelatin
piece. Yeah. It's convenience. It's convenience and price. I mean, convenience is the fact that you don't have to cook it, and it takes some of the labor away, which I understand labor is the biggest problem now. So anything you can do to eliminate labor, people are doing.
I don't know. It's funny. A pastrami king, we were in going by there the other night, Nick, my son and I, And it was just around 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock on a Sunday or whatever. And he called up, can I still get a takeout order? He goes, they said, yes, you gotta get in right away. He goes, well, can I still get a brisket dinner? They said, yeah. But it's not going to be on the machine. It's going to be hand cut. And I'm going to Nick, oh my God, you're the luckiest guy in the world. It's different when it's that thin slice of brisket.
Totally.
But he got like, quarter-inch slices of brisket. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be, But
that's like hand-cut. I used to go in the city to Smith's. There was a Smith's bar in every corner.
Yeah, sure.
But they would have the corned beef, and they would just like, hand-slice it. It was just, oh, my God, that on a fresh piece of rye bread. Oh, crazy.
Well, there are two reasons to be in the restaurant business. One is because you think you're going to make some money, which generally doesn't happen. And two is because you just love the product and you have a tremendous amount of respect for it. And every once in a while, those two factions collide and you have a great place. But the problem is that, economics have dictated, the dumbing down of a lot of delis, restaurants, whatever. I was just having this discussion the other day about mediocrity in restaurants and delis and stuff like that. And the thing is that the difference between, price-wise, between mediocre restaurants and great restaurants isn't that big. They're charging a lot of money for a lot of mediocre stuff. And I was talking to my sous chef, and I said to him, he's been hanging out in Brooklyn with this woman that he sees, and she lives in Brooklyn. And I gave him a list of restaurants. I said, the best thing you can do for your career at the moment right now is to go out and eat. I said, you're wasting, because he's always telling me he's cooking at home. I said, don't do that. You're single. You got a lot of money here. Shoot the lock off your safety deposit box and go out to eat, because you'll get the benefit of everybody else's experience in a microcosmic way. You'll be able to, quote unquote, study under a great chef for 2 hours and see how his appetizers are served, how the restaurant flows, how the thing is presented, how, timing between the meals. You'll gain a lot of knowledge if you pay attention, and you won't waste your money and or the calories on mediocre stuff. So anyway, I do this whole speech. I gave him a list of places to go to in Brooklyn, Manhattan, whatever, when he's out here. So he comes to me the other day. He says, yeah, we went to this place the other day. But I said, will you stop? Well, she picked it. I said, you're the chef. You picked the restaurants. Bogarter. You know what I mean? She's a fundraiser. If you want to raise funds, let her be in charge. You know what I mean? You're the cook. Knock it off, And I believe that. I mean, if you really want to see good food, don't go to those places. Go. I mean, I get, Tuesday night you want a burger, fine, But go out, experience.
But
that
it goes
stuff.
Back to the slice of cardboard tomato. What? There's nothing worse than you in today's world. Everybody wants wraps, but you get a turkey wrap. It's a wrap with lettuce, this terrible chicken roll or turkey roll or whatever.
Yeah.
A tasteless tomato, and it's terrible.
I know, and they won't even cut the damn thing through. Did you ever notice that? There's a law in delis. There's an absolute unwritten rule that you're not allowed to slice the sandwich all the way through. You know why? This is so Tom can have mayonnaise all over himself, because I'm eating it in a car somewhere and I can't. You got to pull it apart. Half the roast beef goes into the back seat because he's yanking it and it just lets go, It's terrible.
Well, you talk about modern foods. The world is crazy. I was at 7-Eleven and they had a cheeseburger on the rotating grill. It looked like a hot dog. and they call it a cheeseburger. So essentially what it is, it's a tube of chopped meat with cheese in them throughout the mixture, and they're selling that as a cheeseburger big bite. Thank you, Matt.
I think you're allowed to be violent against the person who put that there, because that's crimes against humanity.
So me, I had to try it. So
it
got really bad. So now the new thing is they put rolls underneath the grill in cellophane. So it's like self-serve.
Oh.
So first of all, because the roll is in cellophane underneath the heat source, it's all damp.
Nice.
And hard.
Right.
So the first thing that happens is I put my tubular cheeseburger in the thing and the roll breaks. And just like you said, you put the ketchup, you put your mustard, whatever you put in a barbecue sauce, whatever it is, it's coming out the bottom.
Yeah, of course.
It's a mess. And I don't understand. And then I go to the supermarket last night, and you can get a pack of 12 hot dog or hamburger rolls for 50 cents.
It's unbelievable.
I have to now go to Stop and Shop, get a bag of rolls to go get my fake cheeseburger tube.
You have a complicated life. My advice would be, first of all, my
abandon ship.
Yeah, why would you even take one of those things off the roller? And anything that comes on a roller shouldn't be eaten. All right, it's just if it's on a roller.
I thought I was assured there'd be no chicken beaks in there.
I don't know. You're just asking for trouble when you go in there. You know, if you go to 7-Eleven looking for lunch, I mean, the only thing you can eat in 7-Eleven is what, a banana? Everything else is either salt or sugar.
I do get bananas.
Yeah, that's it. And they always give me that, you know, would you like another one for, you know, 50 cents? No, I'm a one banana guy, you know. Hey, it's, anyway, 7-Eleven's good for coffee and popcorn or whatever. But anyway, so on the last subject here, soft shells, I've been seeing them. They're finally down in price, you know. I was paying like $70 a dozen for a while there, so it's just kind of exorbitant. So my advice to people, if you're a soft shell freak like I am, now's the time to start looking around, and they're coming down in price. I think you can probably get them for, you know, $4 or $5 a piece at this point, which wasn't happening up until about a month ago, a couple of weeks ago.
So I go into the seafood store. I get some soft shell crabs real quick. What do I do with them?
My favorite way to do them is to basically just dip them. You know, I after you clean them, I leave them in a little buttermilk, and then I just flour them quickly and lightly, and then fry them. You know, if you're doing home, you probably need about a half an inch of oil in your pan. I do them in a deep fryer. I think that's the best way. They come out crispy, and they're really good. I mean, you can saute them also. I don't like them as much, you know. It doesn't have that same crispness to it.
Difference between sautéing and frying?
The amount of fat. Sautéing is a minimum of fat, like a little bit of oil on both sides. And deep frying is it is a maximum of fat where you're covering
like
the entire thing. Yeah, yeah. That's pretty much it, you know. And both work. Both are, you know, excellent ways to cook them. But the key is to just not cook them too long. You know, keep them nice and... you know, not on the rare side, but, you know, keep them nice and you don't want to overcook them and dry that meat out, because that meat is really, really good. And you know, to not have to screw around with the shell and cracking and picking and, you know, which is fun exercise if you're outside, but a pain in the rear end if you're not, you know. And then, you know, you constantly, you know, they get the little picks and you're struggling for the meat.
I don't remember what time of year it was. I went to my friend Lou's house. He's an friend to the family, an exterminator. But I went to visit him one night recently, and he goes, "You hungry?" He goes, "I saved you a soft shell crab."
Nice.
And he took it out of the tin foil. I don't know what. I guess he had sauteed it or fried it. And I'm just not familiar with them. And I felt awkward, so I just did what I had to do and eat it. But it tasted really good.
Oh, they're great.
It was incredible. It turns out his father used to work at seafood store, and so he was all knowledgeable about cooking this stuff and when it was available. So, you're giving me the hook.
I'm giving you the hook. It's time to go. We have exhausted the hour, so we're going to leave with Tom's three keys to life, like we normally do. Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And we will see you next week. And remember, give us a shout if you want to chat and let us know what kind of foods you were allowed to eat as a budding
adult.
And
that would be at fire@whli.com. Fire@whli.com.
See you next week.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections, from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming personalized sized desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience, and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's. We help, you save.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again, after last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please!
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.